Accession number 8234, reel number 3.
Colonel Draffen, reel 3. I think you were telling me about the Recce Regiment and their vehicles.
Oh yes, well, one of our companies went with Captain McNab to do this recce of a recce in force against El Wack, and we had a section of the recce regiment, and we bashed through the NFD for the whole of the night. We marched on a compass all night to get to El on foot, and we gained complete surprise. And as soon as we opened up on El Wack, they just disappeared. They evacuated the whole place, the bush. So we went into El Wack, collected all the papers we could, which were the first real good papers. We got Italian positions and war maps and a lot of information. And we then set alight to the buildings and withdrew. As soon as we withdrew, the Italians had got themselves round, and there was a long ride, a big ride, I should say. It was 20 yards wide, cut through the bush, this low scrub of the NFD, completely open. And, of course, they could get very good fields of fire down this ride. And the Recce Regiment, who were helping us in our withdrawal, had to use the ride so as to move their vehicles. But they were, as I say, they were armoured vehicles, armoured light trucks. But they just stuck a Bren gun or whatever they got on top of the cab and fired it. There was nothing very sophisticated about them in those days, but they enabled us to withdraw, and that was my real first initiation into proper battle. We'd been bombed before, and the Twinkle Toes had fired at us into our camp, but it was here that we got down to it and we exchanged fire with the enemy.
How did you make your approach to the enemy positions at El Wack?
Well, we knew of this ride cut through, which was only about 30 yards from the actual buildings. So we knew we had to strike this. And we just embussed from our vehicles about, a good 8 miles away, 10 miles away. And we walked on a compass bearing during the night.
Well, how did you manage to keep your men together if you were moving through bush at night?
Well, you kept pretty close. In fact, this was one of the things about the Askari. We found that he was not happy to be alone. And even in Burma, we insisted that they kept together, because they got their moral support. It increased the number of casualties, obviously, but we found that that was the right way to fight them.
What sort of formation did you have for this move forward? Were you in single file?
Oh, yes. virtually single file. I was leading, being the staff officer, with my compass, and I just bashed through the bush. We made a rough estimate, and everybody just stayed within sight of everybody else until we got what we estimated would be about half a mile from the El Wack itself. And then we stopped and took up defensive positions and sent out little patrols to find out where the ride was and where the camp was, which we did.
What was the terrain like at El Wack?
Oh, it was semi-desert with bush about 10 to 12 feet high, so your vision was very limited. But it was open in that you didn't, it wasn't jungly. The bushes, I suppose, the small trees growing within 5-6 yards of each other. So you could walk round them quite simply. There was no question of hacking through. You could always walk through, but it was sandy and this low shrub. You couldn't see above the shrub.
And what about the town of El Wek itself? Was there much there?
Oh, about half a dozen little mud huts with grass roofs, that's all.
And you mentioned a camp that you attacked and set fire to.
Yes, well, that was El Wek.
It was just the mud huts?
Just the mud huts. Mm. I mean, they get a name like Boona on the map. There wasn't even a hut at Boona.
Mm. What sort of strength do you think the enemy were at El Wek?
We estimated about a company.
So you've got two companies plus recce vehicles.
Yes.
Yes,
we were perfectly all right. And we joined battle and then we withdrew.
You say you joined battle. How did you do that? Was it a company assault or?
No. We left one company astride the ride in a defensive position on which we could fall back. The remainder of this force went into El Wek, and when we found no enemy there, the recce regiment were right out on the flanks, and we, as I say, collected all the loot we could, burnt the buildings, and then withdrew to our company. It was during the time that we were withdrawing that the Italians came back and began opening up on us. So then we just used our basic company, and fell back on them. And the recce regiment then joined us, and it just fizzled out. The Italians pushed off and we pushed on.
How did they know you were there then? I mean, did you fire on the town with your mortars, or
no.
What was used to startle them into bolting off into
they
the
must
bush?
Have heard us. They must have heard us, because we didn't. We tried to keep completely quiet. But of course you can't help avoid standing on a dry stick in that sort of country.
So you didn't actually fire on them on the way in?
No.
Did they
Not
have
that I remember.
Defensive positions?
No. No, not a trench system as we know it. Their attitude was to go to bush and then come back.
When they came back, what sort of weapons were they using against you?
Well, they had, I remember, a couple of automatics I heard, but mostly rifle and grenades.
How close do you think they got?
Oh, they got within 50 yards of us. And then they lay down. You see, you couldn't see. 50 yards was the maximum vision in that country. In fact, you couldn't. You didn't get a good vision until about 20, 25 yards.
Did they cause you any casualties?
Yes. I don't remember how many, but I remember well seeing my first casualty. The chap, an askari standing next to me, was hit in the eye, and he lost his eye. Came back with one eye a few months later.
What was the general effect of having been in action on the askari?
Oh, he was delighted. He really pushed his morale up. He saw that, you know, it wasn't as terrible as some people had tried to make out, and his morale went right up.
Now, you mentioned you were the staff officer on this particular raid. I presume that means you were involved in the planning of it.
Yes, the planning was very simple. All we decided to do was go off, take the force off in the lorries as far as an agreed point on the map, and then get out and march on a compass bearing for the rest of it. The plan, when we got there, was merely to surround the village and see what Italians were there, try and push them out to get information. Well, they ran away in any case, so we didn't have to push them out. And it was almost as simple as that.
How was the process of planning carried out? Was there a conference of those involved?
yes. Captain McNab, we came actually to our battalion, and we had our company commander and his company commander and myself and the other people involved, the transport section. We just had a short conference. Didn't take very long.
And then formal orders were issued.
Formal orders were issued by John McNab, who used his own organisation. Then I didn't. I merely was asked at the last minute almost to go as staff officer.
This conference, was it a conference in the sense of being an exchange of views, or was it a briefing?
It was a briefing by John McNab, who'd made up his mind. He had patrolled that area. He knew what he wanted to do, and he said, we'll go in transport to such and such a point, a map reference, we'll debus and compass march to the ride.
So he had a plan in his mind when he formed?
Oh, yes, he'd made up his mind. He had the whole thing worked out.
Did the Italians make any response to this raid?
No. No, they didn't come back at us at all. Mind you, we were at Buna, which was quite a way away. Probably 75, 80 miles away.
Were there any other raids on that scale while you were at Buna?
No. No, the major patrolling and the second LWAC, patrolling in strength, came after we left. So I didn't we didn't take any part in big patrols.
Did you manage to take any prisoners while you were at Buna?
No. No. They were a remarkable success. They only these little sections of banda, as we called them, the Abyssinian or the Italian Ascari, they just used to come across, as I say, fire a few shots into your camp and then push off as quickly as they could.
So where did you go then after Buna?
After Buna, the battalion came back to Nanyuki and had a rest and re-established themselves and got more or less onto our proper war footing. We were issued with better arms and Bren guns, Sten guns, and this sort of thing.
Had you not had Bren guns before?
Yes, we had, but they were all rather thrown together. They weren't very good. I don't know why they weren't very good. They were, but they were all withdrawn. I think they'd been used as training guns mostly.
And you mentioned the Sten. Was this the first appearance of the Sten?
Yes, we didn't actually, I was wrong there, we didn't actually get the Sten issued at that time, but we got one to have a look at.
And what did you think of it?
We thought it was very good. Very good. The, of course, it really came into its own in Burma.
How useful was the rifle in bush conditions?
Very difficult to say. I don't think it lost very much of its attractiveness. It's always a good weapon. It's very accurate, and if you fire it properly, it's a wonderful weapon. What we did find, which I suppose would be new to a lot of countries, was that if you were advancing in semi-desert, in fact in any country, unless it was wet and morass, we used to shoot on the ground in front of the enemy. And this threw up lots of stones and ricochets, which increased your firepower almost. And it was I don't know who thought of it, but we hadn't been told about this in our training before, but it suddenly appeared and we all did it.
Presumably,
it was a great help.
It would have obscured the enemy's view as well.
Yes, well, it didn't, you know, a little dust went up, but it, you see, a few stones coming forward was as good as bullets, really. Increased our firepower.
You were forming up at Nanyuki, I think you said, and getting yourself sorted out. Presumably this was preparation for the advance into Italian Somaliland.
That's right. Then we went off from Nanyuki to Garissa and to a place called Liboy, which I don't see on the map. I forget where it exactly was. But it was facing the Somaliland border.
I think you said it was south of Dif.
That's right, it's south of Dif, below the Lorien Swamp.
And was it just your battalion at Liboy?
Yes, but the brigade was in the area. Spread over a very big area, actually. The brigade was very well dispersed. We had to be, because, you see, the Italian, the Somaliland-Kenya border, it's a very long one. Over 300 miles.
So you didn't see anything of any other troops?
No. No, we saw them occasionally when we went to a brigade conference. But we were self-contained and stayed self-contained.
Did you spend a long time at Liboy before going forward?
No, we just really established ourselves, and it was at that time that we were issued with our transport for moving the troops. Up to then we had had company lorries for our own movement of stores and equipment and ammunition. But it was then that we got the South African transport unit came up. And there's a very interesting thing here, because they were a completely new unit with brand new V8 trucks, 3-ton wagons, and they were driven by the Cape Coloured. Now, these chaps arrived with a captain in charge of their unit, with no arms at all. They weren't armed. And I said, what have they got? And they said, oh, they've got assegais. Well, the commanding officer at that time said, well, I'm not taking chaps into battle with assegais. So we said we would issue them with rifles. And the captain in charge, the South African captain in charge, was absolutely horrified. He said, you can't do that, they'll shoot us. So we said, well, no, they won't. And he said, but it's against all regulations. I forget what I was, where I got
about
to.
About the arming of the...
Oh, yes. So the captain in charge said, well, it's against regulations, you can't do it. So the CO, my CO, said, absolute nonsense. I will take entire responsibility, and not only will I take responsibility, I will issue with them with rifles, and we'll teach them to shoot the beastly things. And we did just that. The only thing was that he was quite right. When we got into Mogadishu, for instance, and we had a couple of days' rest, we took the rifles away from them, because they drank like fishes and they got very vicious, and their knives came out, and they really were nasty people when they got a bit of drink inside them. So from that point of view, they were right. But we took their arms away as soon as we got to a static position, and that was that. But we went to war. This, I think, is going into Abyssinia. It was more like going on safari than going to war. Every company had its company mess lorry. It literally was. You went with your, not only did you have your orderly, but you had a personal servant who was my own personal servant. He was just given a uniform but came along as my personal servant. And we all had camp beds and, where possible, tents. And we went in as though we were going on a glorified safari. And not only that, the beer and the whiskey, crates of it, came along with us. So we started war in a very airy-fairy frame of mind that, you know, another jolly good safari.
There is an old army saying that any fool can be uncomfortable.
Absolutely. But this is no sinecure. The man who looks after himself is the man who comes out at the end. And I'll just give you a very simple thing on that. In Burma, when it was really hot and we got a lot of prickly heat, the man who looked after himself, the chap who washed every day or twice a day and was what a lot of people said, oh, he's pansy. He was the chap who lasted, the chap who didn't bother to wash and wasn't self-respecting, went down with illness. And in actual fact, at the beginning of the war, we were called the Fanny Fifths. They said, oh, you're always top of everything and you're too smart and this sort of thing. But in the end, after Abyssinia, they changed the name from Fanny Fifths to Fighting Fifths. And this is one of the reasons that we looked after ourselves.
This was a principle, presumably, laid down.
Well, it wasn't laid down, but it was a principle which we all adopted.
But presumably, within every regiment, it's the commanding officer who sets the tone and
absolutely
governs the spirit
of the... Absolutely. If you've got a good commanding officer, you've got a good battalion.
Now, these South African drivers, I think you said they were Cape Coloureds.
Yes.
Yes. How did they get on with your soldiers?
Extremely well, until they got drunk. But they... it must be part of their makeup that when they get drunk, they like to fight. And they had these lethal knives, which they secreted about. You never saw until there was a fight, and then out came their knives, and they were not very nice.
Did they fight amongst themselves,
or
did
yes.
they fight outsiders?
Oh, anybody.
What happened then when you did move forward into Italian Somaliland?
Well, we joined brigade almost immediately, and then we had various small skirmishes which were not very interesting from a military point of view. But shortly after crossing the Somali border, our brigadier said he wanted us to leave the brigade and go down to Kismayo. And away we went, and we actually were the first troops into Kismayo with a skeleton brigade headquarters. And then after Kismayo we rejoined the main brigade by going north to Mogadishu. Well, Mogadishu was the first place where we saw the Italians in force. By this time there were a lot of Italian prisoners coming down, and they made Kismayo a prisoner of war camp. And it's the most lovely country, because we were on the Webo Shabelle, this lovely river where they grow all the fruit and the bananas and stuff for Italy in those days, and I presume for export today.
Was there any resistance at Kismayo?
No, they threw the town open and we just went in.
What sort of town was it?
A typical coastal port with rather Arab in its look, and mosques, and of course the lovely sea. We revelled in the sea because we could all have a bathe.
Did you have anything to do with the local inhabitants while you were there?
No. No, we were only there for 2 days, and we were mopping up and collecting prisoners, and then off we went.
What sort of prisoners were they? Were they Europeans, or were they native?
No, they
troops?
Were mostly local Somalis who had been recruited into the Italian army.
And how did they behave?
Very well. They were delighted to be relieved. And they talked to our Somalis, and I think it helped diplomatically a lot. The great thing from now on about this campaign was the brigade. In fact, I should say almost entirely due to Brigadier Folk's initiative. He was determined that we should outstrip any other brigade on this race for Addis. And he insisted that every lorry, every vehicle, had a full tank of petrol at night, and every lorry carried a full 44-gallon drum of petrol, with the consequence that we were always in front, until we were actually stopped by a division and told we had to stop. But then, later on, we were able to go into Addis first, but I'll tell you about that when we get to Addis.
How did you manage to ensure that you always had this petrol?
Well, when you get to places like Kismayo and Mogadishu, and you're the first troops there, you just take it over.
So you go straight to the dump and say that's ours?
Yes, we went straight to the dump. We didn't even say it's ours. We just took it.
You said something about meeting the Italians in force at Mogadishu. Was there any fighting there?
No, there again, they all surrendered, but there were thousands of them. And we had to set up very big camps. Fortunately, there was the Weber Shebele, which meant lots of drinking water, which is always a problem in Africa. And it was too simple.
So no real trouble at all so far?
No real trouble. No, we didn't really hit any strong resistance until we got to a place called the Awash Gorge.
What happened at the Awash Gorge?
Well, they'd blown the railway bridge and the road bridge, and these were just lying down in the bottom of the gorge on the riverbed. And they had got a battalion on the other side, dug in with pillboxes and machine guns, and they had a couple of big guns. I think they were 60-pounders well in the rear. They were shelling us. But we were given the task of getting across the river. And it was here that we really had our first battle of this campaign. Two people, Ronnie Langridge, a platoon commander, and Foxy Hard, a second in command of a company. No, a platoon commander at that time, a platoon commander also. He was one of the draft from England, though he himself was a regular soldier. He'd been through Sandhurst, and Ronnie Langridge, who was a Kenya farmer, they both got immediate MCs. They both quite independently rushed pillboxes in the old-fashioned bayonet charge, and they got across the river, and up they went, and they just went on until they wiped the pillboxes out.
What were the pillboxes built of?
Concrete, reinforced concrete.
What was the terrain like then at the Awash Gorge? Could you give
very
idea?
Really just coming out of desert country into more lush green country. There were nice trees, some lovely trees, plenty of cover, but not too much. I mean, nothing like a jungle. You could always see, perfectly good visibility. In fact, rather like an English countryside, but not so much greenery.
And were the Italians at a higher level than you? Did they have the high ground?
Yes, well, we were on one side of the gorge and they were on the other, but we had to go into the river to get across. And we did a pincer movement and sent C Company right round the right-hand flank. But B Company actually got down into the river bed and up the other side some considerable distance before they came under fire. And then they reassembled and made these two independent charges, and that the Italians then gave up. So our pincer movement was unnecessary. They came in too late.
So the company that got round to the right, that was a redundant manoeuvre, in fact.
Yes, because they capitulated too quickly.
And you mentioned that they had artillery and they were using it. Did you have any artillery support?
We didn't have any artillery support at that time, though we had in brigade an Indian mountain battery, but they weren't up with us there at that particular battle.